You got canceled.
How did they cancel you?
Come about?
Am I in a safe place?
Safe place.
100%.
It took a long time for me to start talking out about it. This is the first week, literally. I mean, you guys have me when I'm just like, I'm here, I'm done, I'm not going back this way, I can't go back.
All right, we're live. Another episode of Business Untitled. We are thrilled to have Drea DeMatteo from Queens, New York City. My mom's from Queens. I like people from Queens. We're going to hear her story. It's a story like a lot of our entrepreneurs. Lots of successes. She's been burned a few times. She's risen from the ashes like a phoenix. And so love to have you here.
I've risen from the asses.
From the asses.
From the asses. It's true.
So wait, before we jump in, I got one question for you. When you came here, did you have any clue who this guy was?
I don't know who any of you are. So
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, we are. I am.
But you had no clue who Mike Novogratz is.
I want your honest answer. I'm going to be honest with you. Zoe,
we're going to edit this out.
Zoe said to me, my friend has a podcast. I think you guys would hit it off. I never looked up the podcast. I never watched anything.
So
I trusted her.
You're the kind of deep research person.
No, I usually am. I usually was like,
oh, wow, that's Mike Novogratz. Even when he introduced himself and said, hey, I'm Mike Novogratz.
What are you supposed to do?
No fucking clue.
No. Okay. Perfect. That's the answer he was looking for.
That's the answer I was looking
Shout
for.
Out to Zoe Cassavetes, who's a dear friend, good friend of yours, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah. Did I fuck up? He's mad
no,
at me.
No.
He's mad at me.
I love you already. You're from Queens.
He thinks he's famous.
I don't know. What, you know what? I don't even think I'm famous.
You're more famous than him.
Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. To your freaking Diet Coke over there.
All right, Mike.
Queens.
All right. So a little bit about our podcast.
Okay.
We became friends with Mel, I don't know, 7 years ago. And we all started traveling together. And Mel finally said to us, he said, you know, people in my community don't get this kind of education. And we were like, well, education of, you know, two knuckleheads. But it was business education. It was introductions to communities, to networks. And so we thought we'd put a podcast together with a guy that grew up in the hood, a guy that grew up in middle class, and a guy that grew up relatively rich, from three different businesses, and interview entrepreneurs, people that have had grit to kind of go forward, screw up, go forward again, and make it. And hopefully those stories inspire our audience. Our audience are mostly young entrepreneur wannabes, a lot from underserved communities. And so that's the thesis and the idea. We've been having a lot of fun doing it.
I like it. I'm like a combination of the three of you. You know, I'm from the hood, or
what
at least
part is
I
black?
Think. Huh? I'm Puerto Rican.
I like that.
I'm Puerto Rican, and I grew up like middle class. You know, from Queens, but then my parents also had a lot of money, but they would spend it so fast that we would end up middle class by the time they spent it all.
It must have been fun.
And then I ended up poor in the end after everything was said and done. Every time I self-destruct, you know, in my industry and with this government.
Do you think you learned that from your parents? Honestly, like if they were kind of boom busters and you became a bit of a boom buster.
Yeah, and I think I was just like, there's no bank in hell, so I may as well just share my money and spend it on everybody. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't know why. The hell, you guys must just like The Sopranos a lot.
We love The Sopranos.
Because we love The Sopranos.
You know, and I know
anybody who survives as an actress or an actor, I guess we call actresses actors these days.
Listen,
I'm gonna call you an actress.
I always called myself an actor until The Woke Brigade came out, and because I was woke before there was woke, and then when woke really became a thing, I was like, no, I'm fucking awake, I'm an actress, don't ever call me an actor again.
But so. Anyone who survives and thrives as an actress. Is an entrepreneur because you're kind of a self-made person. You got some people helping you out. You're trying to figure out how to take this talent that you've got and turn it into something. And so,
yeah, it sucks.
And you're doing the podcast. You're doing so many different things. That's how I look at it.
Like, tell us the chapter one. You grow up in Queens. How do you become an actress?
Man, I mean, my mom was a playwright. So, I mean, she grew up in the mafia. Mafia dad. Yeah, her dad was a maid guy, Joe Babes.
Wow.
You can look him up. They say Joe Babes because he was a womanizer. And then when Google was a thing, I was like, oh, it's because he accidentally shot a baby. Wow. So there's that. So
I like the womanizer story a little bit. I know. The child murderer story.
It was both, but I don't know which is true, actually. I don't even know if that story is true. That's just some online shit because he died when he was 50 years old. So that's a long time ago. But my dad was a furniture manufacturer, which I didn't know he was fully connected to the mob. Also, his father was a Don. They called him the Dunny. Mm-hmm. By the way, when I was on The Sopranos, I really didn't know. I didn't really know a lot of this. I mean, I knew about Joe Babes. I knew about the Dunny. I didn't know that my dad had borrowed money from Shylock's, and I didn't know that they were after him. I learned a lot of this stuff later. I don't know if you guys ever watched Michael Franzese. You ever hear of his podcast? He was the yuppie Don who cheated the government out of all of the tax money on gasoline. Mm-hmm. So he was paying all the family. He's an interesting cat for you guys to interview at some point. I mean, he did time and then he came out. That's a phoenix rising from the ashes. And then he became born again. Mm-hmm. But he's not, you know, pontificating about all that sort of stuff. But he's a motivational speaker now, and he. Anyway, I'm gonna talk about him for the rest of the podcast. Forget about myself.
We do a lot of criminal justice reform work here.
He was my first guest on the Gangster Goddess podcast. Uh-huh. Anyhow, back to me. I found out that there was actually a hit on my dad by his father. I found this out like only recently, which I thought was so fucking crazy. But he was a self-made man. He was a kid who grew up with no shoes. He had to wait for his brothers to come home to get a pair of shoes. And so then when he made money, the reason why we would go from rich to middle class is because he had about fucking 200 pairs of shoes in the closet. I mean, he was the most well-dressed man. He looked like a mafia boss. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Queens, and they didn't want me there. They wanted me to be in Manhattan. They didn't want me to grow up the way they were raised. They didn't want me to have that whole Italian, you know. They probably gave me too much freedom. I was the third child, two older brothers. And
third child as well.
Yeah. It's by the time they have you, they're sort of like, all right, I'm done. You know, we're done. So I was raised by a nanny. Uh-huh. I wasn't even raised by my parents, uh-huh, really. And she wanted me to be in the theater with her all the time because that was the only way to spend time with me. Mm-hmm. I fucking hated it. So I swore I'd never act, and I swore I'd never be involved in the theater. But I ended up going to film school to make movies for directing because to me it was like the anti-theater. It was the fuck you to my mom and her business because that whole business drove me nuts, watching mm-hmm. adults acting like teenagers on stage when I was like, I want to play house. I'm 7 and I should play house right now. Mm-hmm. Why are these big assholes playing house? So I went to NYU film school and I just kept, I was a fuck up. I was a total fuck up. I was partying too much. I was bartending all through college. I didn't really need to bartend, but I got so used to having, you know, $1,500 a night, you know, throwing it in my drawer. I was like, I need to have all this money. I need to have, my parents were still paying for my
life. A good fucking bartending job.
Oh my God. They accused me of stealing eventually.
Where was your best gig?
I worked at a place called, remember Flowers, Metro CC? We're all the same age, kind of. You're younger.
Yeah, I'm older.
You're old.
We're 59.
Oh, you're a little older than me then. I'm 52.
You look 25.
You're 25.
You look 25.
Oh, you stop now.
How old are you?
39.
Yeah, he's 39. He's a baby. He's 38.
He's
yeah.
a baby.
You baby. Morrissey. Did you guys ever go to Morrissey? That was my big gig. Where I made a lot of money. Uh-huh. It was huge.
Yeah.
So I made a lot of money those nights. But yeah, I fucked off and I didn't do well in college and I had to, eventually I had to drop out. They kicked me out. NYU mm-hmm. kicked me out. I did a lot of crazy shit to uh-huh. get kicked out. I wanted to get kicked out of the dorms.
Wasn't kicked out. They just asked you to leave. Uh-huh.
No, they kicked my ass out. They kicked me out of the dorms. I mean, this is probably not the right podcast
this
for
is
these
the
stories.
Right podcast.
Beauty school dropout.
The way I got out of the dorm was I said to my friend, just bring me the 5-foot bong. Uh-huh. And we'll get the fuck out of this dorm room in 5 minutes. My parents will give me their apartment in 5 minutes flat. And that was it. He goes, well, should I wrap it in a sheet? I said, bring me the 5-foot bong. I want to get kicked out. Just walk past security with it. Uh-huh. We're going to invite the whole dorm to do bong hits off my bed. We were out of there in 20 minutes. And I got to go back to the fancy apartment on 61st and 3rd.
And then you started acting?
Yeah, I started jumping in front of the camera to hand in my project because uh-huh. I never had any actors to be in my films. And I was like, shit, I have this project due. So now I'm my own subject because I have no actors and I'm continuously acting. And I think that I really wanted to act, but I was too embarrassed to ever say I wanted to do that because I thought that was so not boss. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so prissy.
Yeah, it's easier to be discovered than to actually say, I want to be an actress.
It wasn't even that. I just felt like it was demeaning, and I knew I'd live a life of continuous humiliation and rejection. and I was so insecure, and I was so shy. I was painfully shy, like painfully shy, up until Sopranos, really.
Tell us about that. When you got cast on that, or how did that come about? Did you know when you first got that script or however it happened, like it was like, this is amazing? I mean, you just told us about your mob connected background. Yeah. Did it hit you right off the get-go that this
not
was something?
Not the mob stuff. No? It was the writing. Mm-hmm. Because my mom's a play, she taught playwriting. She was a big teacher at Herbert Berghoff Studios. She was his protege, and Herbert Berghoff's protege. So he would direct all of her plays because her plays were that beautiful, like mm-hmm. and never been published. I would like to publish them now, but the writing, like her writing, and then seeing David Chase's writing and reading that pilot script. I remember reading it, and I was just reading for I wasn't even reading for the show. It mm-hmm. was just a day player, and I read it and I called my mom. I go, wow, you have to read this fucking show. I was like, this is beyond anything I've ever seen. Wow. On television. And I was like, it'll never get made because this is a work of art. And she was like, wow, I would love to read it. And I sent it to her and she's like, this is untouchable. Uh-huh. Because she'll sit there and correct everybody's script. And it was beautiful. And wow. The pilot was pretty extraordinary. And they didn't try to make it something else, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It was going on cable. They didn't care.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing that from the minute you touched it, like the writing's that important, you know, that you can pick up on that. And that the first episode had like the ducks and the psychology yeah. and it just came from this really, you know, interesting place, right?
I think to start off
a mob show.
I don't know that everybody picked up on it, but I think because I was so in tune with my mom's classes mm-hmm. and listening to her critique writers, I mean, I learned how to act that way, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think I studied acting that much, but I listened to her critiquing the scripts and the writers and how those scripts needed to. And it's kind of like life. Like, if you're not doing something mm-hmm. and you're just stagnant, then the script's going to suck. Your life's going to. It's the yeah. same thing. You know, the story's going to suck. The acting's yeah. going to suck.
When you got on that show, right, you were not one of the main characters, right? Did you know you were going to be that main character, or did you kind of grow into that, right? Because you started off just like in a bar, right? As a
yeah.
can you like as a hostess or something, and then before you knew it, you're one of the main. So how did that feel? How did you like channel that? She started out right, like
yeah,
it was
I remember
kind of a
that,
big
but
part.
I don't know much I about think. Shows, so I yeah. thought that was the whole script to begin with.
No, she when I read for that. They didn't, it was a cold reading, so you don't know what the project is. There's no script or anything. But I don't think they needed, it didn't matter. It wasn't like it was confidential or anything. I think it's cable. Like, mm-hmm. give us a shit. Like, no yeah. one was excited. No one's excited about this. I mean, mm-hmm. what was on? Dream On, which was great. Gary Shandling, Larry yeah. Sanders, that was yeah. great. Yeah. Oz was my favorite show.
Oz was on at the same time, man. Right?
And yeah. no one gives Fontana, is it Fontana, props for that. Because that show, man,
that show is fucking amazing.
So good. I mean, so, but I mean,
remember
Ida
BC?
Huh?
Ida BC?
Ida BC's little fucking hat.
He had that hat on.
Yes. But he wore it like
this
in
is
a
Mel's
little...
hat. He left it the last podcast
Ida
I stole.
Ida BC, I haven't heard that in forever. Oh my God, it was so good.
Did you guys watch Oz? Ever seen it?
No. It's worth watching.
They were too rich for Oz.
Some men can't watch it.
Uh-huh.
Some men find it all too disturbing, I think.
It's actually fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Have you seen
binge
Mike?
Watch it?
Mike, you seen it?
No.
No.
You couldn't make a show like that today.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. You couldn't make The Sopranos today.
Yeah, you couldn't make The Sopranos today.
You couldn't
make
Sex and the City today.
You couldn't make The Sopranos today, you think?
No.
Yeah, you can. Maybe not Oz.
Mm-mm.
You can't make The Sopranos today.
No, you can't. You can't make The Sopranos.
It's so not politically correct.
Instantly goes into racist things, like, really quick, right? Like
big time.
Big time in early pieces of it. Yeah, that they would get canceled.
How did the world get so soft?
Everybody's a pussy now. Yeah. Everybody's a fucking pussy.
It's crazy.
Sorry. I'm going to just sit here and cry for a little bit.
So let's stay on The Sopranos for a second before we really get into it.
Oh, yeah, so the main character, that character I read for was, I read for Christopher's girlfriend. I'm sorry. I read for his, date in the pilot. He might have had a little girlfriend in the pilot. They said, no, read for the Russian mistress. And then he was like, no, I read for every single part, cold read. And I left and, no one gave a shit. So my agent called and she goes, he just likes you because you're Italian. He doesn't think that you're very Italian. Because I went in there looking like a clean slate. They say, when you go in and audition for something, just keep it simple. You don't know what you're reading for and just be a blank canvas.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know I was going in there to fucking talk like this and that and all this shit. Otherwise, I would have had that shit nailed. So he hired me anyway. He goes, would you play the hostess in the restaurant that turns Lorraine Bracco down? I'm like, you mean Karen? I'm going to turn Karen down from Goodfellas?
Uh-huh.
And I went and did it. It was a day player role. And I couldn't say my line because I was so nervous. No one knew who Jim was. He wasn't, no one knew who James Gandolfini was. Yeah. It was just Lorraine Bracco. And I couldn't say my line. But when they called me in for the series, they didn't know that I couldn't say that line. They called me in for the series. It was another day player read. It wasn't anything. It was playing his girlfriend in another day player role. And I knew what the show was about. But I remember they called me in Queens. I was visiting my parents and my grandma. And they were like, can you come and read for us? And I go, I'm in Queens. I said, no, I can't.
What?
And they go, we're in Queens. And I was like, fuck you. I was like, all right. They're like, how fast can you be here? We need somebody to come in and read right now. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And I said to my mom, this is that show that I told you about with the ducks and the thing and the, oh my God. She goes, hold on. I'm getting your nameplate out in diamonds from the safe. My name's Andrea, my full name, like Adriana. They must have seen that Andrea, maybe on a rope chain, And my mother goes, when you say ow, because that was my only line, ow, she goes, you make that shit 9 syllables like your neighbor, like my friend Silvana.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, ow. And that was it. They said that I got that I got
word.
The fucking part on ow.
Uh-huh.
I was like, ow.
Nailed it. Shout out to your mom.
Shout out to my mom. She totally understood the world. I remember we were eating chicken cutlets. My grandma was making chicken cutlets. And she's like, I'll make heroes. So she made chicken cutlet parm heroes, and then we went to Silver Cup, and my parents sat outside. I went in, and I got that part, but it was still a day player part. There was no real role. If they were casting that part for real, it would have been Debbie Mazar, Mira Sorvino, maybe Marissa Tomei, the girls that do that really well. So David loved me. He did, and it was like, it was... Do you remember? Oh, I was looking at Robbie over there now. Sorry. I was just with David in LA. It was the 25th anniversary of the show right now.
Wow.
And he was doing a panel, and it was all these subscribers of the show, of the Egyptian theater. And they asked me if I wanted to come. The audience didn't know I was going. I was just there to support David and Terry Winter, who's one of the writers who did Boardwalk Empire, and Matt Weiner, who did Mad Men.
Legendary show.
I haven't really seen it.
Really?
I've seen parts of it. I think I was burned because HBO was shepherding out my show that my mom wrote.
Yeah.
And they ended up giving it back to me and doing Boardwalk Empire because, Scorsese put his stamp on it, and it was Terry Winter. So, of course, they're going to do Boardwalk. But my show was a more personal show about a family in Harlem, and that was my family, and it's a true story. So I was like, I don't need to watch that one. But then I heard later on that it was such a big scaled show that they were bummed out that they didn't stick with the small family vibe also at the time, mm-hmm. because wow. our show had a different dynamic.
Right. How fast did the cast become friends, or did you guys become friends? Like, we've all met Sopranos. A bunch of them over time. You know,
you have?
Yeah, just randomly. Michael, you know, from the Jazz Foundation, and who went to Poly?
Gandolfini went to, his kids went to Village Community School.
I know, but the big guy.
My son went there.
He gave the best. Right?
My kids went there.
Why can't I think of his name? He gave the best commencement address for one of my kids' commencements. The big guy.
Chirippa.
He gave a great commencement address. It was hysterical.
Where, your college?
At Poly Prep High School. For my kids. My kids went to Poly Prep. All the mob kids used to go to Poly Prep High School. For real.
That's so funny. Like for real. For not real mob Soprano kids.
Yeah. The real right. mob kids. And they still go.
Is Chirip a real mob?
No, but he played the role pretty well.
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? Some of them
He gave
you don't
a great
know.
Story about being in Las Vegas and, you know, how he got the role.
Anyway, so you got the big role.
But so were they friends? Were you guys friends, or was it just a show?
That show was, and so David and I were reminiscing about all this stuff last week. It was, I mean, like, for example, now Jamie and Robert Eiler, they really are brother and sister.
Yeah.
That's a bond that will never stop. He actually moved to Austin to be with her to do their podcast. Their podcast is huge and amazing. Uh-huh. I forgot the name of it. They changed the name of it. It used to be Pajama Pants. But the men were always doing signings, big autograph signings, and I was always a part of that. So I was always with them doing the signings. The women weren't always together. But there was like this deep camaraderie because the show was so new. None of us knew what hit us.
Did you know how long did it take you guys to understand The Sopranos was like enormous, like huge? You know, was it that pilot? Was it the first season? Is there a point in time when you look at it and you're like, oh, wow, this is going to be.
What was your first moment where you was like, holy shit, I'm a fucking star? Like that's that funny. First moment somebody ran screaming. Crying, or just that moment, it really, really hit you.
I think when they start, I didn't like doing press or events. Like, I didn't like going to the awards. It really freaked me out, like all the red carpet shit. But I had to go, otherwise David would have been pissed. And when we would get to the airport, that was intense. The amount of people waiting at the airport and the fact that we couldn't walk through, that we would have to be escorted on a golf cart to get us quickly through everything, away from everybody. That was nuts. That was, you know.
That's the first time it really hit you.
I think in my little mind, yeah, that was early on in the show. But they didn't like us. You know, Hollywood didn't like us. The critics didn't like us. The academies didn't like us.
Was it because you were threatening? Like I'm saying, like coming from HBO and streaming, it was threatening the big Hollywood
I think
machine.
There wasn't enough glamour for them. Uh-huh. I think they felt like we really were those characters. And
you guys did a pretty good job playing.
We acted like we were.
I mean,
like,
you kind of were.
I didn't want to do press ever because I didn't want anyone to know that I didn't talk like this. I wanted everybody to know that this, to think that this, because I was serious about my fucking performance. I was not fucking around. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be any different from that. I figured everyone told me to change my last name, that being an Italian was a terrible thing in our industry back in those days. That was a big thing. Mm-hmm. DeMatteo is like a fucking four-letter word. Uh-huh. And they tried to change my name so many times. You're going to be stereotyped. And I figured, fuck it. Now I'm doing it. I'm leaning into it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want anybody to know that I'm not this character. David Chase at this Egyptian theater the other night, they asked him that same question. They said, so when did you realize that this show was you know, a hit? Mm-hmm. And he looked up behind him at the big 25 on the big screen at the Egyptian and the whole 3,000 or how many people were in the audience. And he said, right now. And that's true. He did never, I don't think he ever recognized the impact of that show. I think, you know, you hear it over and over again. I mean, even in the lockdown, I was like, what's something else is going. And then when I left the house for the first time after the lockdown, I mean, I get recognized a lot because I haven't changed. Mm-hmm. I still look the same. And maybe from all the years of partying, who knows? I'm like fucking pickled, you know? <It's> like, I mean, I haven't done anything to my face yet. But when I walked out of the house after the lockdown, it was a whole new crew.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was a new world. It was kids in their 20s.
Oh, yeah, because everyone watched what they watch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So it just never stops. Mm-hmm. The show literally fucking never stops for us. It was the 20th anniversary. Now it's the 25th. Right. I mean, it's just going to keep perpetuating. And now the critics love it. Mm-hmm. But they didn't like us back then. We showed up to the Emmys the first year. David knew they couldn't stand us.
Mm-hmm.
We showed up in a New Jersey transit bus. Uh-huh. No limos. A fucking New Jersey transit bus. And we all piled out. Uh-huh. They were not amused.
Uh-huh. That's funny.
No one's trying to grab shots. It was just under the radar. Mm-hmm. They were like, fuck these people.
Yeah. Mel, ask your question.
And this is the life Mike wants really fucking bad.
Your question.
Which question?
About her getting...
That question. I was just going to get into the question. So
Mel's got to write his questions down before the podcast.
me too.
I was just going to say the question.
I need to write my answers down.
To go, My question, I have many questions, but one of the questions is, so the Sopranos is fucking the biggest thing in the world.
Swear jar.
Swear jar.
By the way.
Oh, it's empty.
First of all,
right
she cursed 48 times.
She does not. It doesn't apply to guests.
Okay.
In case
now.
You guys don't know, we
keep
have
going.
A swear jar now.
I feel really triggered.
We put $20 in every time we curse, and it's going to go to a viewer.
That's how your entrepreneurs.
It's going to go to a viewer, and that viewer is going to show that they got the money. They're going to post it, and we're going to repost you guys on our fucking.
Yep. Keep going. You'll get it later.
Can I Venmo
Come
you
on,
guys?
Ask the question.
That's another
for all my money. Curses.
Where you get absolved.
So,
okay. So Boss, whatever that.
Yeah, you're on The Sopranos, biggest show in the world. I think it was season 5, right? And boom, they kill you off. Did you know that was coming?
Oh yeah.
And what did that feel like? Were you ready to die?
You know, I don't think you're ever really ready to die. Okay. So
I want truth. Were you mad? Were you?
I went to David Chase and I said, I want to direct a movie. That's what I went to school for. I've never done it. I want to do it. I have a script that I love. I want to know what you're doing with me. But you're really not supposed to ask the boss. Not David Chase, the boss. I mean, like the boss. Like he's the fucking boss, you know? Mm-hmm. These questions. Because he doesn't like these questions.
Wow.
But I thought he loved me so much that it would be okay. Because I was like his baby, I felt like, on the show. He never, I was never intended to be there. I wasn't in the first season. I became a series regular later by that. I think the A Hit Is A Hit episode. So anyway, he sits me down. I'll never forget. It was during season 5 while we were filming it. He sat me down on a curb on the floor. I don't know where we were, but I think I had the neck brace on. And yeah, I was about to do this really emotional scene, and I don't remember what scene it was, but I feel like I had the neck brace on. We were shooting in a house to double as the hospital, maybe, or something. Maybe it was in the hospital. I'm all banged up. Maybe we were going to Dover to get an 8-ball.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what was happening. I don't know if you guys really know the show that well. But David reminded me of it last week. He sat me down and he goes, all right, I'm going to shoot it two ways. I'm going to shoot this where you survive, and I'm going to shoot it where you get away. And no one's going to know how it ends until it airs, because we have confidentiality problems on set. And that was true, because now I think the confidentiality problem is the guy that just wrote that fucking book that's smearing Jim's name all over town, who were all furious about it, because Jim was like a fully whole human being, and now this guy's writing some sensational bullshit book just to make money on the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he might have been the rat, that guy. And so we shot it two ways. And no one was supposed to know how it ended. But I had already been offered another job. And I knew in the back of my mind that I was out. And I was ready. I had to convince myself I was ready. Season 5 was supposed to be the end.
Yeah.
That was the, and he said it about 5 times at this panel the other night. And just hearing him say it over and over again, it made me feel good for the kid who was 30 or 29 that was about to leave the show. Because yes, I was heartbroken, but I was also really done with that character arc because I couldn't take it anymore. I was so invested in it. And I was such a serious actor. Not that I'm not a serious actor now, but at this age, you're not going to kill yourself over your art. And in those days, I might have. I really tortured myself to get to do those scenes. I was done with that. I was ready to go do comedy.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere you wanted to put a hit on him?
No. I loved him so much. He gave me my life. I feel like he birthed me. Like, I was such a shy kid. I would have never had the confidence to do anything else. Mm-hmm. I remember he gave me a gift of a compact. And I remember looking at the compact, and I wrote him a thank you note. And the thank you note was somewhere along the lines of, like, I can now look in this mirror and fix myself up when I'm about to go in and audition for another role. And if these motherfuckers don't want me, it means nothing. Mm-hmm. Because you had me, and I trust you implicitly, and it means I'm in the wrong place. So
shout out to him.
Yeah, David Chase he's incredible. Mm-hmm. He's it's just a whole different breed of writer. There's very few like him, you know, out there, I think. So, and especially because I'm Italian, and that whole Italian thing, I mean, it was just done so, it was really done beautifully and funny. Funny. He was so funny while he was being sad and all that stuff. But yeah,
right,
and
so
I went and I took Joey. I took the NBC show, and that was he was upset because it got out in the news, and that was bad. And now everyone knows what's gonna happen to Adriana. Mm. So now the confidentiality is leaked and it's by the press. So I had to do damage control, and I had to go on talk shows, which I don't like to do. I mean, now all I do is fucking talk, but I'm just trying to.
You're a good talker.
I'm just trying to talk my way. I don't know. I just don't want to act anymore, you know. But I had to go on all the talk shows and say, "No, I'm not dying." They don't know what the fuck they're talking. I didn't take a Friends spinoff. What are you guys, crazy? I was like, yes, I did.
And just kind of like, okay, so Joey and then...
They convinced me to do it. I didn't want to do it.
Uh-huh. My father, did Joey do? I can't remember.
It actually did great.
Oh, really?
But everyone thinks it was a big failure, but it was actually a huge triumph. If you would have looked at numbers compared to what they are today and then, I mean, we were still at 14 million viewers.
Wow.
But Friends was 17, so that didn't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Sopranos crazy. was like, I don't know, maybe 12 to 13, but that was cable and paid. These days, we had a strike for it. No one gets anything. It's streamers, but you don't really know. But it was doing really well. But we weren't happy.
Do you guys still get paid on residuals from Sopranos every time at shows?
I don't know why I'm on an entrepreneur show. I mean,
you signed the wrong contract.
I'm like on a corner with a fucking coffee cup like this.
Autographs for a dollar.
We're gonna get to that. Someone pay me when I say fuck. No residuals. Yeah. That's a big deal didn't get residuals. Yeah, it was a really big deal. Now I heard a fucking doll is coming out, that I have a Funko Pop coming out. I don't get anything
from
any of that. And I still can't walk down the fucking street in peace. So I'm like, and I don't mind. I love it. I love the fans. But there's always this little part of me that's like, man, I wish I just would have.
Yeah, you know. Wonder, like, we talk about this a lot, like ethical business and non-ethical business. And it wouldn't take a lot for them to share the IP, some portion of it, with the people that do it.
And nothing.
And
I see nothing.
People are just greedy as fuck. They take advantage of you until they can't.
Yeah. And
that's disappointing.
That. Yeah. And I'm quiet about it. Like, I'm not a real. I know I talk a lot and whatever, and I know I'm...
Yeah.
Are you really? You're paying in?
I just said greedy ass.
No. You guys need... You're going to have to charge me to be here. I can't do that to your viewers.
I only
oh, you just paid
he's
for
so
mine.
Rich.
I'm going to get change.
You paid for mine. He's like, no.
Fuck.
I counted 40 fucks.
So after that, like when more recently when Hollywood, the Vax stuff, all you know, how did you feel about how did that how did that come about?
Am I in a safe place?
Yeah, you're in a safe place. 100%.
You guys are not going to hate me or judge me because I wasn't compliant.
We have 300 million viewers. They may have something different to say.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I don't want to crash your platform. It's a, it's, you don't want to be canceled.
We had another Italian guy. He said, "Is this fucking real?" It's real.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us about it. For real.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Listen. This is my coming out party this week. I have. So far, been on every Fox show. Never thought that Fox. I would ever be on any Fox show in my lifetime. I'm a self-proclaimed, I was never political. I've never been into politics. I lived in a literary bubble of, you know, just art and literature, and I hated artists who spoke out about politics. They fucking bored me to pieces. I don't mind the musicians a little bit because I was all about the whole hippie movement, you know, until I realized that maybe that was a whole fucking psyop in the last couple of years. But I am still a hippie in the sense of what we still want to believe a hippie is, you know, and I think I hung my hat on that when it came to the vaccine. My kids are fully vaccinated. I never wanted to vaccinate my kids, but my ex wanted me to, so I did it, and I it was easier to just say yes, and I figure everybody's doing it, and I'm not, and I guess I am. I was always a sheeple to a large degree, and I just, something was just tapping me on the shoulder, just saying, nope, you can't do this. You can't see the kids can't do it. You can't do it. I took care of my nanny who raised me, and she had a heart transplant. And they really wanted to vaccinate her. And they really wanted all of us to be vaccinated, to be around her because she was elderly. And they're like, all the old people are dying. It was like, I swear to God, it was like a God thing. And I'm not like a psycho religious person. You know, I've always, even though I guess in a lot of ways, through that time, the only voice that I felt safe listening to, because I couldn't find the truth anywhere, was listening to a lot of conservatives. And I felt more, I know this sounds so crazy. My friend, I was on a text chain with an old friend of mine who used to always call me a commie, all my libertarian friends. And he put me on a text thread with Tucker Carlson. And he's like, maybe you'll feel better. You know, I think we all used to hang out in the same circles, Dre, but you wouldn't have fucking paid any attention to him because he had a bow tie and short hair. And I was like, you're probably right. But that was like the only solace I could find. And I was like, wow, so this is where I'm at. Like, I'm watching The Daily Wire and I'm listening to Tucker Carlson. And all of a sudden, I'm in a different... I'm like, what has happened to the world? Like, I feel like my side of the world, even though I was never politically labeled as anything, because I never voted for anybody. I didn't give a shit. I was anti-establishment, period. I also felt like it was irresponsible for me to vote for anyone because I was uneducated about it. You know, you want to talk to me about, you know, smart? I'm right here. But I didn't know. I felt like it would be irresponsible for me because I hadn't done any research and I didn't know who was who and what was what until it knocks on your door and until you lose everything. And I felt like I lost everything.
What's so interesting, we were talking about this earlier. I read an article today that I posted with all my conservative friends and it set their hair on fire. And I wasn't trying to set their hair on fire. I was like, we've gotten to a place where either side really can't figure out, even if you're trying, what the truth is.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's a shitty place to be. I mean, Tucker is a master at being 70% truthful and 20% full of shit.
Well, he admits that from back in his day, but now
he still is. I mean, the Putin interview was just broad propaganda, but there's a lot of truth to it, right? It's I mean, listen, I don't like the guy because he called me a domestic terrorist. And next time I see him, I'm going to pound him.
Tucker? Yeah. Oh, shit. You He's are famous, dude. You are super famous. Hold on.
You still have no idea who he is, right?
But I'm not saying...
I'm dead. I'm a dead person in this interview
But the,
no, you're not.
Listen, the left is just, I got your side. The left is just as bad. And so it's really hard to figure out the truth. You decided something resonated with you, and that was your truth. And I'm not criticizing you at all for it. What's interesting is once the cost became, I mean, literally you're getting canceled by Hollywood, it's something where you've worked your ass off and you've become a fixture. Was there something in you that said, fuck them. I just want to, I just want to fight because you don't get to tell me what to do versus... like you used to do with your kids, your husband wants to do it, your ex-husband wants to do it, so you just do it anyway. It's not that big of a cost.
No.
Like what created that willingness to really risk a ton and lose a ton just to be right? When we don't even know what right and wrong is.
I did so much research and I never stopped. And the more...
Yeah, but none of us are. None of us. We all did so much research.
The more I saw, the more I understood, the less I knew. And I still feel that way.
Yeah.
I feel, but once you see certain things, you also can't unsee those things. And even with Tucker, like, you know, everything that he was about, like I had a lot of people fight me when I would defend him on certain things, a lot of my liberal friends. And then I was like, but you don't even know the full person. There's no, you haven't watched fucking thousands of hours of interviews. Like I have. You fucking cancel someone in California who can't act anymore. You chop off my fucking balls. Well, what else am I going to do? Mm. I want to know why. I really want to understand what's really going on. I also will rewind back to the whole Bush administration and how I felt about that, even though, like I said, I'm not in the politics thing. But me and my ex, Shooter Jennings, at the time, he left the country music industry. He didn't leave the country music industry. He made a rock and roll concept album about the New World Order. And it was the last night, the concept album is about the last night before martial law. And Stephen King, we asked Stephen King to narrate the album. And he narrates, he would have never narrated it in this administration if it was about Biden. But he did, but it's the same administration. Like it's the same issues. It's just a continuation with a different left, right, red, blue. It doesn't fucking matter. Like you said, it's invisible. There's no groups here. There's no political party. This is about what's behind those political parties, in my opinion, and how many people are going to be controlled and blackmailed and told that they need to follow a certain thing. So when Shooter did this album, he's DJing Stephen King from a pirated radio station on the night before the cops come in and shut him down and they kill him. It's a fucking amazing album. It's called Black Ribbons, and I directed a music video with him. I was like, I want to do a video on this song, and it was called Summer of Rage. And if you go watch that music video, it's messed up. We did it really quickly because we had a film before we got in an airplane. So all the camera angles are messed up. But it's with my daughter. And she is woken up by a TV telling her to wake up. And her parents are gone. And she crawls out of her crib. She's this big. She crawls out of her crib, going into the bedroom. Mommy, Daddy. And now that TV comes on. And it's like a big stop sign that says, no, Mommy and Daddy aren't here anymore. I'm here to take care of you now. And now she gets in bed, and she's just waiting and looking around. She goes downstairs, and she plays with her toys. And it's done. Her parents are gone. There's all this footage of the parents with the lights flashing. And so now this child's going to be raised by society. And the whole song's about FEMA building mass graves. And you and I, they'll vaccinate. And it is... nuts. And to see that video now, like when I was, I posted it in the middle of the lockdown because I was really moved by what was going on. I was like, we knew this was happening. We knew this was coming. I went back to sleep after Shooter did that album. Shooter and I then broke up years later. But that album was so prophetic. He'd probably kill me for even promoting it right now because I don't even know that he wants...
My brother's a huge Shooter Jennings fan.
I don't even know if he wants to be associated with it right now because, he's working in the industry, man. Yeah. He's in it. Mm-hmm. And it was a work of art. It's not, it's still art. And people have to know how to differentiate. Even with The Sopranos, they couldn't differentiate. Mm-hmm. The anti, all the anti-Italian defamation guys, all that. But there was not even one moment where I thought, maybe I'll just comply.
Right.
There was not even one fucking moment.
So I want to say, I'm going to just restate, she believed in it, right? You believed in it no matter what. Whether or not all the facts were there or not, it was like your set of beliefs. And I think what's interesting about it is, during lockdown, we can have different set of beliefs about it, but the canceling's a different thing.
That's what I'm trying to get to. It's one thing
to say, hey, right now we believe in a lockdown, you can't come on the set. It's another thing to cancel her because of a belief.
Yeah, we had,
right? I canceled myself.
You did? Okay.
I just took myself out of the game. I didn't even want to be subject to it. I didn't want to fight. Mm-hmm. I'm not, I know I talk a lot, but I'm not the first person to be like, it took a long time for me to start talking out about it. This is the first week, literally. I mean, you guys have me when I'm just like, I'm here, I'm done. I'm not going back this way. I can't go back.
Yeah.
The vaccine thing, it was a hippie not wanting to take medicine. That was it. Mm-hmm. I eat fucking flowers and herbs and I take all kinds of weird shit, And I believe in that weird shit and it's gotten me by my entire life. I mean, not to say that I haven't taken antibiotics or things that I need and that medical, I didn't know what was going on. I was as scared as everybody. I was watching this thing unfold on television. I was believing everything I was seeing. But then when they decided that frontline workers were now the fucking enemy, the ones that didn't want to comply, and that when I started finding out about what they were doing in certain countries with people's bank accounts and what they were doing with the truckers in Canada and how they were using propaganda to color, the working man just standing up for their rights and trying to turn them into racists and just doing all of this really bizarre shit. Then I remembered, the album. I remembered what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that here we are. We're in the middle of it, and it's here. And now I think that I feel like the unelected officials behind us have been working on this for a really long time, and now technology is in a place where a lot of it can come together. Mm-hmm. And this was the first, well, not the first, but definitely a big test for a lot of people.
So I guess you're not going to give the government your DNA.
I'm sure they have my DNA.
This is the crazy part. Our privacy. I'm in the cryptocurrency business, and we talk a lot about privacy. But the reality is, we've given our privacy away a long time ago.
Of course.
Our phones, they know exactly where we go.
Yeah.
With our bank accounts, just your Uber. Yeah. You can figure it out exactly where you try Uber.
But the question is: is it too late to change that?
It's a great question. I think about it a ton.
Yeah.
I remember having a conversation with Lloyd Blankfein about crypto. He said, "Nova, I love you, but you're a fool because we lost privacy. You're not getting it back." It's funny when you're a celebrity, you've lost your privacy a long time ago.
I don't care.
Right. And so
I don't even care.
But it's weird. Like, where do we care?
Well, I care about about my safety. I care about, I've followed a lot of these freedom fighters that have been outspoken. A lot of them are gone. A lot of them are fucking dead.
Which is crazy.
And I can't believe it. Yeah, and I can't accept that it is the deaths that they claim to be. There's too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I would just say this about it, right? Privacy, when we talk about it, there's also the aspect of privacy that they have all your data, but they can manipulate to that data. So when you think about elections, what you like, what you don't, what movies are popular, right? And we talked about this, but that's where privacy and data, it's relevant every second. The more you collect, like your data from 10 years ago, there's some relevance to that,
right?
But your predilections change.
When we grew up, even if someone wrote down all the stuff you did, And all that data mm-hmm. was put in files somewhere. You couldn't do anything with the fucking files.
Yeah.
Another $20. Right? It's supercomputers and now AI and machine-based learning that's allowing this data. Because data used to not be important.
Right.
Right?
But and
now it's wildly important. It's power.
And essentially the use case on crypto, Web3 at large, is decentralized control over data. Right? That's essentially versus Google and Meta controlling all your data, which is effectively what happens right now.
Because
I don't know that much about the crypto world.
Because Iceland is such a small place, 300,000 people.
What is?
Iceland.
Oh, yeah.
That everyone in the country trusts the government, so they submitted their DNA. And so there's an app. So before I kiss you, I make sure you're not my first cousin.
Oh my God!
But so if you trust your government, people used to trust your government. You were willing to give out your data. Now we have half the country that doesn't trust one side or the other, and so I don't want them to have all our DNA data.
Yeah, nobody trusts the government now. Right. Very small amount of people
and
in
so
general.
Why would we want the government to have? You know, they might find some disease and say, "Hey, this is going to cost so much as insurance. Let's not give them medicine."
We should all go to Davos and go to the Rebuilding Trust Summit and see what's up.
But it's really
this was why
the original impetus for the whole crypto decentralized movement was to how do we get this back? And it's a really complicated question.
Yeah,
and it's both sides. I mean, look at China is the worst at it, right? They own everything you do. But it's creeping in all over the world.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
in a
nutshell, the promise of crypto is that instead of having the Apple iStore, instead of the Apple iPhone or the Google iPhone controlling every app and charging 30% on that there's like a decentralized platform effectively where if you're Uber, if you're Airbnb, instead of launching on something that's being controlled by a giant network where all the power's with that network, right? That it's decentralized. You can write your own app in this language with set rules that only the community can change, right? That's effectively the promise of why you would build on Ethereum versus the Apple iPhone store.
So you could have a DNA database that protects your identity, and if you want to use that data for research, you can pay the person something for it, theoretically. These are really hard projects to get off the ground. But so
what if the grid goes down?
Conceptually, if the grid goes down, we're all screwed.
If what goes down?
The grid.
If the grid goes down, I think it's like 7 days before, the apocalypse.
And then Gavin Newsom's president. Let's fucking go. And then he's going to pull off his fucking mask.
So
and his tongue's going to come out.
Somehow this transition into OnlyFans. Mm. And I want to hear about that transition.
So wait, before that, when you canceled yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Or they canceled, you canceled, you decided, fuck them. They decided, whatever, another $20. You spoke about being rich, poor, did you see your income go and decided, shit, I am poor again?
Yeah.
But you don't put a 20 for shit.
All right.
I mean, you guys owe so much money on my behalf.
We'll just settle up later when we watch the rewind.
It's really ridiculous.
So yeah,
I'm about to lay a bunch of them down. I might even take my clothes off for the OnlyFans section.
The OnlyFans.
I mean, how many viewers do you guys have? Let's talk about jobs.
So was the OnlyFans decision like a part of that, I'm poor again, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm going to do something outside the box at the time, right? For you.
Yeah.
And
the most bizarre. I am living the most bizarre existence right now. Things I never, ever expected. Ever. I don't even I look at my boyfriend and we're just like, what the fuck are we doing?
How did that decision come? And was it because you were poor again, or was it just?
Yes.
Okay.
I was about to lose my house again. I'm a single mom. My dad always had money when he was alive. He always told me don't be an actor because it's the hardest fucking job in the world. You'll be up, you'll be down. You never know. I turned down a lot of roles. I was never the actor that wanted a big career. I didn't care about the career. I never wanted to play a lead. I like being part of an ensemble. I like playing a supporting character. I don't need to shine. I don't need to be anywhere in the friggin' spotlight at all. My stomach's definitely going to start growling because I haven't eaten since this morning. Mm-hmm. I can hear it. Sorry. It's just getting really distracted. My stomach's like, shut the fuck up. Anyway, sorry. It's another 100 from you. Another Benji. Come on. I want Benji in the jar.
In case you don't know, he's a billionaire.
Listen, we love... we need money, too.
He has hundreds for everybody.
So anyway, maybe you can pick up my mortgage. Maybe you can just pay off my house for me.
That's what happens at the end of the show. Mike pays off your mortgage.
But this is the thing. I never ask anybody for money. Like, last night, we had a meeting with this awesome guy who wants to help us with our business and stuff, but I just can't. I can't accept it. I'm an Italian man. I'm a friggin' Italian man. I've always taken care of everybody else. So... anyhow, I took jobs as I could with my children. I would never leave my kids to go anywhere. I would never travel. I told my agents nothing. I will only go to New York. The only time I ever left L.A. to go to New York and shoot was to do Shades of Blue, and my house blows up.
Wow.
So that's I'm thinking crazy. I'm taking a gig where I'm going to have enough money to live for, you know, 5 years. That's the way I worked, so that I could just be with my children 24/7. I did not want them to ever have a nanny, because I was raised by a nanny. Well, that came back to completely destroy my life, as my nanny's dying, by the way. So as she's dying in my house, like right after the lockdowns, during kind of the lockdowns, I agreed to take a forbearance during that time, because everyone's like, you should do it, you should do it. I probably didn't need to. At the time, I had enough money to get by, but it would have run out. I didn't know what was going to happen in the world. I didn't have savings. I just always knew I'd work. I always did. I always trusted that that the universe and God and whatever would take care of me, to take care of my babies. And the forbearance was a terrible idea in retrospect, because they kept telling me that they were deferring all my that I wasn't going to have to pay.
Right.
And that I was fine, even though I was getting foreclosure letters. And then I would call and I'd say, I've got a foreclosure letter. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. Don't pay attention to it. You're fine. Okay. This is like four times until I'm in foreclosure.
Wow.
And now I go to look at my statements and I am paying for I don't know how many insurance companies they had me coupled with.
Penalty fees.
And, okay. And this but is like I'm, after the house blew up.
That's or New no. York. I'm sorry.
Oh,
that
okay.
was I jumped around.
Okay,
I'm never focused.
All right.
Shades of Blue, I took that job. I went to New York thinking I wouldn't be able to save this money now for the next God knows how many years, and that'll be enough for me. I don't need a lot. Like, I just need enough to take care of me and these two babies. The house blows up. I have to rent a townhouse now because I have a huge family. Not huge, but I take care of the old lady who I bring with me everywhere I go, who was my nanny, and she had a heart transplant.
That's amazing. So
I always took care of her. That was she took care of me when nobody wanted to take care of me. I lived with her for 50 years.
Wow.
I lived with her for 50 years. I didn't even live with my own mom for 50 years, you know? So she's dying. Fast forward now to the mandates, before the mandates. It's right after lockdown, and I'm meeting with some producers, and I'm holding her hand over here while she's dying. And they're saying to me, well, when do you think she'll die so that I can take this job? And I was like, I don't think I ever want to work with you fucking people ever again. I don't even want to be in this industry. And now I have the agent in my ear continuously telling, because the mandates are happening now. After I couldn't do those jobs because she was dying, they're like, you have to get vaccinated to even audition for things. Whatever. I don't think I've ever auditioned for any role I've ever gotten. And now I go to my family, and all my friends know, but I would never ask anybody for money. So everyone knows what's happening to me. But I'm always the person everybody else will ask for money, and I'll give it to them. I'll give them fucking everything. I don't care. Or I'll take everybody on a trip, or I'll buy you diamond rings, or I'll do whatever the fuck it is you want. Until my shit completely falls down. He's like, she really needs it.
She's on a roll.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I get heated when I talk about this thing. Everyone just sort of was like, well. So I felt like I had nobody. Wow. I felt like I really had no one.
All the people you probably helped at one point.
Everyone sort of went quiet over the vaccine because it became politicized. It wasn't just like, you know, it's like being pregnant and everyone's like, but you should get an abortion. I'm like, but I want to keep this baby. What are you talking about? I was always pro-choice. I'm still pro-choice. So are you, right? Like, do whatever the fuck you, I don't care if you're getting vaccinated. I didn't know what the implications were of the vaccine at the time. So I wasn't even, when my friends wanted to do it, I was like, do whatever you want. Like, I don't care. You want to keep your job? I feel you. Like, keep your job. Right. I didn't have a job to keep. You know, I went from job to job, but I knew I couldn't try to get a job. If I had a job to keep and they kicked me out, by now I'd be in a lawsuit because now I don't give a shit. And I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm a warrior at this point. That's how I feel. My daughter begged me not to lie about the vaccine status. I could have. A lot of people did. And I have a big tattoo on my arm that says no liars. She's like, Mom, like that. And you're going to teach me to lie because you made sure that I would never lie. And I'm like, you're right. I can't teach my kids to.
Right.
You never hear about OnlyFans.
Huh?
I never knew about OnlyFans. If I would have opened that fucking account in the lockdown, I would never have to worry about money again.
Wow.
How does it work?
So, right. I mean, contextually, I was just going to say contextually, right? It's 80% correct goes to the creator and 20% OnlyFans takes. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Like, and you can kind of set your business model up, like what the subscription is or what have you. You have a lot of latitude on it effectively, right?
And everything, it's a platform. Any way you want it set up. I had somebody help me understand it because I didn't understand it at first. I joined to do a podcast on there. I didn't join there to do anything crazy.
Right.
I thought, I want to do this podcast. I don't know how to be quiet anymore. I don't want to act anymore. I feel like I need to just interview people, and I think I would be good at that, and I think I would have fun doing it. And I posted one picture, and it went viral.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if viral is the right word, but I got a lot of heat. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of heat, and we had to mitigate it. So, and my manager, and the way I said that, first of all, my agent dropped me during the mandates without an email, without a text message. Crazy. I thought we were friends, too. I was like, holy shit. She would probably say, if she heard that, well, you weren't getting work anyway, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? And maybe true. You know, people in their 50s, women in their 50s don't get a lot of work. Also, because I don't qualify for the 50-year-old role, but I also don't qualify for the younger role. It gets messed up. Mm-hmm. But I always worked. It was never an issue for me. Anyhow, the manager starts sending all the press to me. This is during the strike. So now there's the actor's strike.
Right.
So first it was the mandates. Then there was, I did one movie in between that came through. I think I would have still gotten that movie, even if we were still in a mandate, because half the people on the movie didn't give a shit about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, the strike happens, and now I'm done. I know that. I'd already been in the first foreclosure when everybody was about to shut me out. I asked for money from one person. That person would just give me a little bit of money for a lawyer. The lawyer couldn't do shit. The lawyer sucked. And only, it was so crappy. My house was also flooded at the time.
Wow.
It was so insane, the amount of events that were happening. My nanny dying, dies. I now have to pay for the entire funeral, get her body to New York, get her whole family there, you know, work that whole thing out. The house is flooding and all the floors, the vintage, beautiful old home, all the floors are standing up. I thought I was going to have a fucking nervous breakdown. Then I had to move my mom out of her house in the Hamptons because she's about to go broke. And she has dementia and as a caregiver. I was like, I don't know how much is going to hit me right now. I felt so pressed. The first foreclosure, all of my insurance money finally kicked in. And that sort, I put the house on the market. And Compass Real Estate helped me out. They gave me money to not give the house to anyone else. So that they could sell the house. Because the house is a really special house. And now I'm paying them back. So the OnlyFans started when Compass was like, we can't sell your house. The house wouldn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what I did, we did everything. The house wouldn't sell. Huh?
Where was the house?
I'm still in it, so I'm not going to say it. Yeah. But it's in California. But,
yeah. And so from there, you just were like, okay, I got to figure out a solution.
The OnlyFans, yeah. And
what do you do on OnlyFans? I haven't.
I mean, look, if you look at my Instagram, there's no pictures of me ever. There's no selfies. There's none of this. There's no bikini shots. Maybe there's a random shot of me looking kind of cute, mm-hmm. kind of sexy. It's really a work platform for me. And now I'm shadow banned, so it doesn't even fucking matter. Mm-hmm. But OnlyFans, I was like, okay, so I'm going to take these selfies. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this thing. All these huge celebrities are always half naked, and they're mm-hmm. my age. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. So I look in my mirror in my closet, and I take a picture in my mirror, my closet, and I posted it.
On Instagram or OnlyFans?
I posted on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
And I said, opened an OnlyFans page today. I was lagging on it. My friends were joking. My boyfriend and my kids were all, and my kids' friends, my kids' best friend, my daughter's best friend was like, you should really do an OnlyFans page, Dre. I don't understand what you do. You're just gonna, it'll be quick. It'll be, you'll make the money. You'll pay Compass back. It'll be great. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was going to do a podcast on there that was going to be more about politics. And then I put that picture up, and that was it.
So people kept, and so on OnlyFans, you post selfies, you post pictures of you in a bikini.
I'll do some professional pictures. Like tomorrow, I'm live streaming and interviewing one of the housewives.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll go on OnlyFans.
It's going to be a live stream on OnlyFans.
And what, like, if I want to watch this, what am I paying?
I don't know. It's different on hers than it is from mine. Maybe 15 to pre-save it. $15 to pre-save it. Uh-huh. It's like watching a TV show.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
And so you base your own.
Yeah, it's basically your own a platform boss. Where instead of being on YouTube, where it's like some weird algorithm, you never know how it's hitting us, and it's just like some little, right, for your views you get, it's basically pretty straightforward, right?
It's totally, you're your own boss.
Yeah, you're your own boss. It's a platform. You can monetize it. We could put this thing on OnlyFans if we wanted to.
I got that, but is...
Want to be
it,
on OnlyFans, Mike?
Let's do it, Mike. Let's go.
Take your shirt off. So wait.
Is it...
I pay one monthly subscription and I get to go on every day I want and see whatever you're posting, or is it?
Yes, you pay. Okay. And I thought the highest, I didn't know anything about it when I opened the page. I thought it was $20 was the highest you could go. So I put myself at 15. It's $50. So mm-hmm. I undersold myself like I always do.
Can you raise it now?
I feel like it would be weird. And I think that a lot of my subscribers
like
weren't happy because I didn't really get fully naked,
mm-hmm.
but we're about to do a bunch of weird things this week, tomorrow and the next day. We're doing a huge photo shoot, and I can't say where this one's going, because this one's almost about Ultra Free. It's about my brand, so I'll get naked for my brand.
Let's talk about your brand.
Wait, I got one more question.
All right.
So you post it, it goes viral. No. Did it turn into, holy shit, I'm making money right away? Or,
oh, well, the manager saw all the press and just started sending it back to me and saying, we're not dealing with this since we're not involved. And this has been my manager for 20 years.
Wow.
And I felt like, so you're telling me, you know I'm broke. You know that I have to now go pay a publicist, because am I going to call Fox News and the Post and all these publications that want a soundbite about why I would do such a fucking psycho thing? And you know I'm going to get a lot of heat, and people are going to bash me in the media, and I got destroyed. I felt like that was really, really shows you what people are made of mm-hmm. in this industry, and it bummed me out. I love my manager, but that didn't sit well with me.
Is he still my manager?
And he keeps bouncing that press back to me, and I keep having to hire somebody to help me. But
the OnlyFans, at least he doesn't get his cut of your OnlyFans.
But there wasn't even a big cut to get. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't. I was like, you know, you try to find something that's gonna fit me better. Like, maybe you should be looking for hosting jobs or podcasts that I could do mm-hmm. while I can't be, you know, a compliant actor within the industry. It was a bummer for me. It was definitely a bummer.
Do you interact with your fan base there. So now you got a fan base. And you interact because they send in questions or...
Yeah, if you live stream there, I'll answer fan questions. And for the most part, they're pretty respectful. Mm-hmm. DM them and stuff. Right. You sell your own pictures to them, personal pictures, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's basically like a platform you can monetize for your content. It's that simple, right?
I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't have it.
And you know what? When you say you wouldn't be doing it, it's only because it has the reputation or the lean towards porn, right? I'm saying like, but there's a lot.
There's a 100%. If my daughter said she was going to do it, I'd be like, you're out of your fucking mind. You're at the beginning of your life. I'm at the end of my life.
But no, you're halfway.
But do you think there's a like a use case for it that's more just about democratizing content and information, right? Instead of, again, instead of having YouTube control it under some algorithm nobody can figure out.
Well, that's why I started originally. I thought I was going to do a podcast on there. They have OFTV.
It just doesn't have enough reach for that right now. Is that what you're saying? Like their user base is too plugged
big, man.
In.
Huh? It's pretty big.
So how come you can't do just a podcast and monetize that there?
I can. We're going to do an OFTV thing, which is not, there's no money. Uh-huh. That's just basically advertising on the platform.
How's OFTV work?
That you can do long form content, I think, and it just goes up and it can be edited. Live streaming, which a lot of the creators do, is just you're a fly on the wall watching these girls just do what they're doing for the day. God only knows what a lot of the girls are doing. Mine are pretty, you know, they're
you're being normal.
Yeah.
I'm just being myself.
Did you make money? Enough to pay off your mortgage, and if after that
I will never pay that mortgage down. No.
Did you make money? Period.
We made enough money with the surge when it first started.
Yeah.
To get me out of trouble.
Wow.
So we're okay right now, and and now we're using the money for Ultra Free, because I won't ask anybody for money.
I like that. Yeah. So let's talk about Ultra Free.
Yeah, let's talk about Ultra Free.
Chapter 4.
Where was the inspiration from? How did you come up with it?
Some people haven't heard about it yet.
Sure. Okay, Ultra Free is brand new. It's launching this week. So my boyfriend, Robbie Stabler, who's the only person who stood by me.
Shout out to Robbie.
It's my baby right there. Man, we've been through hell. We really thought that our bank accounts were going to be tapped. Not that there was anything left to take. But, you know, just watching even Trudeau doing his, you know, beautiful things in Canada over there. During that whole time, we just felt like there's just no freedom. There's just no freedom. Freedom's like a four-letter word. Mm-hmm, you mention it on your social platform, you're going to be shadow banned.
Yeah. You got to join the Bitcoin community. We're all about freedom.
We're going to talk to you about that.
I would love to. I'd love to know more about it because this is the next chapter. That we intend to keep the money this time and not to give it away to all our friends that don't really give a fuck about us.
So Ultra Free.
Robbie's the he's the creative director and the drummer of a band called All Them Witches. Their fans love them. They really love what he does in the band with his merch, the merchandising. The band, even when they were off the road for all those years, were during the lockdowns. He found a way to keep them relevant through making merch and, you know, all handmade stuff that he would do with bleach and colors and all this stuff. So anyway, he's the artist. He's does all the videos for Ultra Free. We're now going to do that for ourselves. So he'll, you know, he still has his band and everything and does all that stuff. But for us in Ultra Free, it is about freedom of speech. It is about not being censored. It is about getting back to a time where freedom was cool. We want to make freedom cool again. Now when you talk about freedom, you're like some right-wing supremacist lunatic. Like that was never the case. Like freedom was always associated with like unity and I don't know, man.
Hippies.
I feel like everything.
Yeah, but the far left and the far right has kind of screwed up the dialogue, and they've tried to hijack both sides.
I do think, though, and I'm not far right.
Yeah.
Even though they have a lot of social issues that I'm not down with, but I feel like there was more freedom over there right now.
Unless you want to get an abortion.
Yeah.
Mike,
all right, we're not going to argue.
But I also, I can get it. I mean, I'll fucking go.
You can't say the far right's got more social issues.
No, I agree with you. My daughter and I.
Both sides.
100%. But my daughter,
she's
and
entitled to her opinion. So
she's a, like, I'm a liberal, like, liberal kid.
But I'm entitled to fire back.
Yes, you are. Fuck that. Don't worry.
I'm not worrying about it. I'm just saying, like, it's just like you can have an opinion that the far right is where freedom exists right now. Or not the far right. That the right, more freedom exists than the left. That's a valid opinion.
I said, look, there are assholes everywhere. You may not agree with it. I mean, again, if you want to have an abortion, it absolutely doesn't exist.
Well, yeah. Of course. No, I'm with you. Listen.
58,000 rape victims in the last 12 months have been forced to deliver babies that they didn't want. 58,000. That, they don't think it's free.
That's a lot. I don't know that statistic. I don't know the statistic either. Yeah. No,
but anyway, you were saying.
Go. I love when men talk about abortion. It's my favorite. I love it. Keep going.
I'm freedom. But I'm about
me
freedom.
Me too. 100%. So, yeah, I don't agree with a lot of the social issues. I agree. My daughter always goes, you're socially liberal and you're fiscally Republican. I'm like, okay, whatever that means. I would just say I'm probably a libertarian or I'm nothing. You know, like, I just don't give a shit. Like, everybody just leave everybody alone and have fun. So Ultra Free is that. Like, anybody who feels caged by any circumstance, whether it's abortion or, you know, someone who might have a mental disorder or a physical disorder, anybody who feels caged in by anything should have the fucking right to feel ultra free. And everybody's been so fucking ultra lately. Everyone's so ultra in their beliefs and their this. Why don't you stop being ultra this and ultra that and just be ultra free? And stop judging your neighbor and your friend and you're this and you're that. And let everybody do their own thing.
Yeah.
So, but we also poke a lot of fun at it. So if you look at our Instagram, which is ultra free with two A's, because you're so ultra, and that's our Twitter too. Instagram is... We just launched it, so there's no... We're not going to probably get any followers because nobody... I don't exist on Instagram now. I'm shadow banned, so you can't really find me or the brand because you're talking about freedom, and you're talking about freedom of speech, and it doesn't exist.
Right.
And it really doesn't exist, though, on the left, and we know that.
You go to Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you're all... I don't know how to wrap my head around that platform.
And you can get shadow banned from Twitter.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
tons of people get shadow banned from Twitter.
I agree.
It's centralization of control.
The Twitter certainly has a freedom DNA.
I know. Yeah, but I don't trust anybody.
I mean, I read it all along because that's where crypto is.
But you do.
I don't know where the... I still... The jury's still out. I don't know yet what that story is.
And what's
I want to see that story unfold.
What's the product...
I love the name, by the way.
Yeah.
Ultra Free?
Yeah, it's fire.
What's the product?
The product is streetwear. My son is obsessed with streetwear. You know, all these brands like Spider, and I don't even know what half of this stuff is, really, but I'm always buying it for my for my kid. And Robbie's art, it really, he's like this psychedelic cartoonist and all kinds of weird stuff. It almost looks like, of course, his band's called All Them Witches, so a lot of the imagery is kind of witchy. But you know, we're Christians, but we're not like psychos. Like, oh my God, you know, we're just our in the background that this is our belief, but no, I don't really care what anybody else believes as long as you're not an evil motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, you Mel does a lot of merch, right?
Yeah,
you know, talk about with for
Robbie.
For
ever
some
heard of City Morgue? Yeah,
I'm not sure. I like the sound of that.
So trap metal rock band. Ooh. They sell a shit ton of merch and sell out a ton of shows.
It's a band.
Yeah, it's a band.
Similar concept. And he does two merch
guys,
for them.
One is merch. I mean, one is Brazilian, one is Italian. They blew up, sold out Madison Square Garden, ton of arenas.
Wow.
They do millions of dollars in merch a year. Yeah.
But it's really about like almost like a statement in its own regard.
What their vibe is. Ultra freedom. Like,
that's what it is.
Said fuck the man.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I'm on OnlyFans trying to make the money instead of borrowing money or.
And is it launching this week or it launched?
Yes. Right now, it's all going to be limited run. Eventually, we'll have some stuff that's always there. We're making the stuff at home. I mean, literally. So it's, and we have people, you know, we have our people, we have our crew, but it's ultrafree.co with one A. It's the handles on socials are ultra with two A's. And then it's ultrafree.co on the Google if they let you find it.
So I don't know if you notice, you are an entrepreneur, like to the max. Every step of it, you have done it and
thanks,
found
guys.
A way
I've done
to
it
go
my
above
way.
And beyond and make yeah. it work. And that's what an entrepreneur is. And
I
that's,
didn't want to.
That's what the show is about. Like me, I've been kicked out of every school since the 7th grade. In the 10th grade, I just decided I'm not going back, right? So I didn't go back. I was kicked out. Kind of whichever way you want to. He went to Princeton.
Oh, you fancy motherfucker. Yeah.
He went to Columbia. Oh. He was born rich. He wasn't. It starts like a joke. A black guy, a Jewish guy, and a white guy walks into a room.
Bar.
And created a business Untitled, right? So you are an entrepreneur to the fullest extent. Every time you fell down, you sat there and you figured out a way to figure some new shit out. Now you're going into Ultra Free, which that name is dope as shit.
I'm oh, glad you guys
yeah.
like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, I really like
that name.
Melvin,
you're an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur because he's got the...
Yeah, and me, you know, kicked out of every single school since the 7th grade. I'm a high school dropout.
All right, let's keep bragging about
for
that.
For you.
I'm just saying.
It's real. This guy just hustled.
It's hustle.
Just hustled.
Yeah, it's a hustle.
Shot
and
I own a bunch of I've been yeah. shot. Own a bunch of restaurants now,
too, yeah.
became a music executive, own my own label, own some real estate now. Like, it's the grind, it's the
yeah,
hustle.
Yeah, you wanna take Ultra Free to the tippity top? Let's fucking go.
So I'm saying you are an entrepreneur. So I have three fun questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
First question, if you had a superpower, I mean like Marvel superpower, what would it be?
Man, it would be like the Avengers, man. I want to smoke out the bad guys.
What would be a power you use to smoke out the bad guys? Mike's superpowers, he's bald.
Oh, man. I come from a place of total fucking love. I want the bad guys, the guys that are behind the black curtain. I want them to... Oh, if I could make people recognize the error of their ways and try to redeem themselves and come back from it, that would be my superpower.
So you'd just go like this.
Yes.
Love.
And it'd be love.
Yeah, just, and I'm not trying to be like all, yeah, man.
Nah, I love that.
I really wish that people could just turn it around and forgive themselves and forgive each other.
Yeah.
What was your most splurge expensive purchase when you made money for the first real money for the first time, not a house, like something fun?
I never bought myself anything, really. That's true.
I love that.
I chipped in to buy my dad a Cartier tank watch. Maybe that was a big one. Man, that's a hard question. I mean, that's a hard question. I don't know. I can't. Maybe the house. But my dad helped me with the house. But now the house is a noose around my neck. I bought all my girls their little pinky rings that they wanted.
I like the pinky mm-hmm. ring.
That's pretty. Thanks. Yeah, I like the pinky ring.
But my girl, who gave me this? Oh no, did I bought this one? Samantha Ronson. She gave my daughter one when she was born. I don't know if I really buy myself anything.
To every girl that's listening or guy that is amazed by your story like I am, like we all are, and you had to give them an ounce of gold of just what it is to be an entrepreneur, what it is like to be
life
resilient.
Lesson. Life lesson.
A life, one lesson.
Like your piece of wisdom you're leaving.
Your
us
piece
with.
Of wisdom.
Oh, dude, these are hard questions for
this
someone.
This is
like
the final question. We boil it down to this one question, which is going to live on forever.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah, give it.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. Uh-oh. Because usually we always got to get this together. But like, here's an actual ounce of gold.
Oh, I love these. I have a few of these. Oh, you got the Canadian maples. That's what I do, buddy.
So that's
your ounce of
gold to you.
Keep with you. And Mike,
and
was
you
that
leave
worth
the ounce of gold?
Unfortunately, it's for the little less than it was last week, $2,010.
I think we should stop
it's
asking
up.
Him what
it's
but worth.
It's
because he jinxes
no,
it every
it
week.
It was up a little higher down. It's heading back up.
Yeah. So we asked this, like, what's your ounce of wisdom, in effect?
I mean, I hate to say this.
No, say it.
So crass. Don't be a pussy.
Don't be a love pussy. It. I just love it.
Fucking Rick. Another 100 in the jar.
No, I mean it, because you know what? You're gonna have those moments where it's just so dark, man.
Yeah.
And you know, if it weren't for my kids, I mean, I would tell every woman that can start a family. Because having those babies, man, that's the biggest inspiration I have ever had. And if you don't, if you can't start a family, hang around some young people.
Nah, Michael says that.
Well, yeah. That's 2 ounces of gold. I love that.
That's a lot of ounces of gold. I think there's a lot of ounces of gold. And I think you're super brave for all that stuff you went through for real. And it's amazing because you were just doing the right thing, following your heart this whole time. And it's just a fucked up world out there. And I don't really curse, but I'll even put $20 into that because I think that story was really inspiring. It's like amazing to have you. Thank you so much for coming by and getting to know us.
Permission.
It's fine. I'm not going to you.
I think when you listen back to this, you're going to realize how much of an entrepreneur you are. And how resilient
Gangster Goddess, we were really trying to push our brand, Gangster Goddess, and we just kept getting fucked over by so many sleazy men.
But that's the story of being an entrepreneur. You fail 9 out of 10 times, and one time you just hit it, and you hit it again.
Ultra free.
Shout out. Ultra free.
Drea, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This was dope.
Thank you.
Aww. All right. Slip a coin. I'm just kidding.